Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yevamos is daf Pei Vav. We're halfway down on Pei Hei Amad Aleph. We're towards the bottom of Pei Hei Amad Aleph. We are starting towards the bottom, Tanur Rabbanan. It's about 7 lines from the bottom of the Amad. Thank the Lubin Foundation for the sponsorship of daf. Daf of Bilan Zecha Nishmas. Joseph and Zoltzman. And we get underway. The Gemara yesterday talked about a shnia. If a woman and a man get married and they're prohibited to one another on a rabbinic level, so the Mishnah taught us that a number of sanctions are imposed mostly on her. When I say mostly, I merely mean all, but I just want to be nice in the beginning of this year today. But all the sanctions go on her. She doesn't get ksuva, she doesn't get peiro, she doesn't get mizona, she doesn't get belos. So the Mishnah describes numerous sanctions that are imposed on her. Obviously, the purpose of those sanctions is to try to promote a divorce. In other words, this is a marriage that is a rabbinic prohibition, and the chachamim want to promote a divorce. And so, to motivate a divorce, so money is usually a good motivation. So, generally speaking, you want to get someone to move. So, money, generally speaking, is a great way to get somebody to move. So that's the general purpose and the general need. We noted already yesterday. We're going to see it right now. Sanctions against her. What about him? How come those sanctions are levied against him? So okay, good. So that's the question. We are going to be dealing with it right about now. Tana Rabbanan, 7 lines from the bottom. The Amud Amanal Kohen Gadol Grusha Vachalusa Kohen Hedjot Yesh L'Ksuva. So if you have a Kohen Gadol or married to a Amana, you have a Grusha and a Chalutza married to a Kohen, Grusha or Chalutza, married to a Kohen. So in such circumstances, she does have a Ksuva. Peros, Mizonos, below, she's got everything. So there are absolutely no sanctions against her. However, I'm sorry, Vihi Psula Vladup Puzzle. Now, as a result of this marriage, she's going to be disqualified. But meaning, what does that mean she's going to be disqualified? She's going to become a Chalala by being married to this Kohen because it is a Torah prohibition for this marriage to occur. And it's a Torah prohibition against Kohanim to marry a Grusha and a Chalutza or a Kohen Gadol to marry an Amana. Consequently, she's going to become a Chalala. And moreover, if she has a child through this union, that child is also going to be a halal or halala, depending on whether the child is a boy or a girl. And we will do our best to promote a divorce between this man and this woman. They're not allowed to be married to one another. And so therefore, we're going to try our best to force a divorce between the two.
How is she worse as a halala? I mean, how is she worse? She couldn't marry Cohen anyway. She was a girl, sure.
How is she any worse than she what was originally? Oh, as a grusha, that's a good question. Okay, stay tuned. In other words, good. We're gonna not answer your question, but the Gemara is gonna kind of address your question. Shnius midivrei sofrim. Now, what if the marriage between this man and the woman are prohibited, but only on a rabbinic level? So then, ein laksuva lo peros lo mazonos lo below. So then, the brisa says what we already know because it said so back in the Mishnah, and that is she forfeits at that point in time ksuva peros mazonos below. She forfeits her all of her ksuva contractual obligations. Her entitlement, so to say, she doesn't get them. Vikshera, she on the other hand remains kosher, vlada kosher, and the child that she has is kosher, meaning that this is it does not affect her and her status, and does not affect any children that she has. If a man and woman have a union which the rabbis prohibited, so the child is not going to be a mamzer or any kind of any type of pagam, any type of blemish. And once again, because this is a union which is a prohibited union, so the chachamim will do their best to try to create a divorce. And now the Gemara wonders, I don't understand. Well, when you had an amana or a marrying a Kohen Gadol, or a Grusha marrying a Kohen Hedjot, so she still remains, she still is entitled to her ksuva. Why should that be? Meaning, why isn't she sanctioned in that case like she would be sanctioned in the case where there was a rabbinic prohibition? So the Gemara's response is, again, there's going to be two approaches to this question. And the first approach given by Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is Mimnei Shehu Pasol Vehi Psula. Because he's disqualified and she's disqualified. V'chol Makom Shehu Pasol Vehi Psula. And when he's disqualified and she's disqualified, Kansu Oso Ksuva. So the knas, the fine is against him and not against her. What does that mean? So take a look at the bottom Rashi on Pei Hei Amud Aleph, and Rashi over here articulates and explains the Gemara. He says, I found the following girsa in the Tshuvas HaGaonim. Okay, that's exactly as we have in our Gemara. The girsa that Rashi quotes is what we have in our Gemara, which of course means that there are other girsas in the Gemara, but anyway. V'hachi Perusha, and Rashi says, and this is a pshat, what happens, says Rashi, is the Gemara, Rashi quotes the Gemara in Becharos, is that when a Kohen was married to a woman who's prohibited to him. So let's say a Kohen is married to a Grusha. It's a simple example. So what becomes of this Kohen at that point in time, meaning during the marriage? At that point in time, he loses his rights and privileges to serve as a Kohen. He goes to the Beis HaMikdash, they say to him in the Beis HaMikdash, no, you can't serve. Why not? Because you're married to a Grusha. Now, as we've discussed time and again, he doesn't go through any type of status change if he's married to a Grusha. She becomes a Halala, but he doesn't get a status change. But nevertheless, he will be barred and banned from doing any of the Avoda while being while married to a Grusha. Similarly, right, the Shulchan Aruch brings down, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash now, but similarly, Shulchan Aruch brings down, a Kohen can't duchen. If a Kohen's married to a Grusha, he can't duchen. Okay, that's... I mean, literally, can you imagine? I mean, unfortunately, the answer is yes, but can you imagine? Kohen married to a Grusha, and he's about to go to Duchen, and the rabbi goes over to him and says, look, I'm really sorry, you're married to a Grusha, you can't Duchen. So, what will become of that relationship? What will come of that relationship is he's going to go home, and there's already strife and animosity in that relationship. In other words, he is going to be suffering as a result of the fact that he's married to her. Can't do the Avoda, he can't Duchen. Right, he's not going to, correct, no, Shulchan Aruch writes that, right, he's not going to get an Aliyah,
because he's a kind, couldn't get,
he's not going to get Rishon, because, okay, good,
he's not going to get,
so in other words, there's already going to be a tremendous amount of animosity when he comes home. So there, the whole purpose of the Kenas Chachamim is to try to promote a separation between this husband and this wife. So, as Rabbi Shimon ben Lazar explains now, when it's a Kohen married to a Grusha, because he's going to be sanctioned already just by virtue of the marriage. And that's what the Gemara means when it says, hu pasul, he's disqualified. It doesn't mean, it's not, the Gemara does not hear speaking to the idea that he's going to receive any type of permanent taint, but while married, he's going to be banned and barred from doing the avodah and from duchening and from getting an aliyah. So there's already enough turmoil in the marriage where the chachamim feel like they don't need to do anything.
Once he gets divorced, he gets back his...
Yes. Now Rashi over here points out, right? It's going back to that same Rashi I just quoted a moment ago. Rashi says, "Ashi dor hanavi psula al yado." Rashi again, the Rashi is just quoting the Gemara Bechoros. The Gemara Bechoros describes that he can actually get reinstated, so to say, even before the divorce, just he has to make a neder. And the neder says that he's not going to get any benefit from this woman whatsoever. It has to be a neder berabim. Okay. But anyway, yes. The answer to your question is yes. It's correct. It's an issue in the Torah. Yes. So, the... Kansuo sok suva mimne ma'amru shnius midivre sofrim. O mimne ma'amru shnius midivre sofrim mainlam ksuva. Mimne shuhu kasha vihikshera. Now going on in the Gemara, now we understand the next stage, which is, okay, so by the Kohen to the Grusha, so he's going to have to pay her a ksuva, and the Chachamim don't feel that they need to impose any extra sanctions, because they're already built in strife in this relationship, because of his disqualified nature during the marriage. And then moving on to the Shnia, so how come by the Shnia, which is only Nisa Darabanan, ain't la ksuva, mimne shuhu kasher vihikshera, because the marriage doesn't change any statuses. Meaning, while a man is married to a woman who's rabbinically forbidden, he's still fine, she's still fine, v'chomakum shu kasher v'kshera, and any time where he's kasher, she's kshera, kansu osok suva. So there was a kenas imposed upon her. Okay, now why her? Doesn't fully explain, but basically her, because nothing's going to move them from separating one from another. In other words, there's no strife in the relationship. They are right now violating Nisa Darabanan, but nothing there is really trying to stick a wedge in them. So the Chachamim said, okay, we'll start trying to stick a wedge in, and that is through the monetary sanctions of having her forfeit her ksuva.
Yeah, but the thing is that she's not the one who can initiate the divorce. He has, so it can actually be on him, not on her.
Okay.
She's in the, you know.
Right.
She's like,
why can she initiate the divorce?
She can.
I understand, but we, okay, it'll be a little bit better explained in just a moment. Yeah.
Yeah, but
Sean.
Halotze is also a rabbinic.
Very good. That's a very good point. In fact, we're going to get back to your point in just a moment. That's an excellent point. So the okay. So that's the opinion of Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Omer, halalo divrei Torah v'divrei Torah insrichim chizuk v'halalo divrei Sof v'divrei Sof insrichim chizuk. And then Rabbi says, no, that's not the difference between these two categories. The difference between these two categories is very simple. One's a Nisa D'Oraisa and one's a Nisa D'Rabbanan. When it comes to Nisa D'Oraisa, and they're violating Nisa D'Oraisa, so the mere fact that they're violating Nisa D'Oraisa is enough of a motivation, if you will, there's enough wrong in this marriage where the Chacham don't feel that they need to now introduce anything else into this marriage to try to create a separation between the two. But if it's an Issa D'Rabbanan, so unfortunately, but that's just simply the nature of what we are. We see an Issa D'Rabbanan, we say, okay, it's an Issa D'Rabbanan. All right, it's an Issa D'Rabbanan. It's not Issa D'Min HaTorah. So the Chachamim asu chizuk l'divrayim, the Chachamim had to reinforce their words, and therefore to try to create more of a wedge between the husband and wife, so therefore sanctions against her by having her forfeit her ksuva. Then the Braisa ends off with one more line. Davar acher zu margila v'zu, I'm sorry, zehu margila v'zehi margila so. And who instigated this marriage to begin with? Not instigated, right? Who persuaded whom to get married? So, you want to say the man?
So it's always the man who marries.
The man marries a woman, but who's persuading whom to get married? So zuhi margila, meaning Rashi says over here, zuhi margila. Amala kohen gadol grusha vechalutz lo kohen hedjot. Hu margila misisal li nasei lo. Vizushnia dekevan delo e mifsala velav zara mifsal velo mifsala mida bbiaso mir galaso she isha rotzei li nasei yoser min ish. The Gemara Rashi over here quotes a klal that comes up throughout Gemara, and that is a woman wants to be married more than a man does. Okay? You probably noticed that's at one point in your life. Men have cold feet, women have no cold feet when it comes to marriage. Okay, that's just simply the nature. And so therefore, generally speaking, when it comes to marriage, yes, it's true. The man is going to court the woman, but yes, it's also true, the woman's much more interested in getting married than that of men. So therefore, this helps us understand now a little bit better why all the sanctions are against her, because the Gemara says she's usually one who's persuading the other to actually get involved in this union. Now, I know I read the Rashi, but I'm just going to ignore. I know I read the Rashi. I'm just going to ignore for a moment some of the Rashi that I just read, because now the Gemara asks the question. Davar acher man ketanila. Okay, look. Let's look at this Braisa again. Just review the Braisa one more time. The Braisa says that on a Daraisa marriage, and in a violation of an Issa Daraisa, so she does not lose her, she has not forfeited ksuva. On a Darabanan, she, the Chachamim, are going to have her forfeit her ksuva. What's the difference? So we basically have two approaches in this Braisa. Shimon ben Elazar and Rebbe. Shimon ben Elazar says it has everything to do with the fact that he's going to be Pasul, she's going to be Psula, statuses are getting changed, and if statuses are going to get changed, the Chachamim don't need to do anything more. If no statuses are going to get changed, the Chachamim need to get involved. That is approach number one. Approach number two is Rabbi. Rabbi says, no, the difference between them is very simple. One is an Issa D'Oraisa, one's an Issa D'Rabbanan. Issuri D'Oraisa, the Chachamim don't need to do anything. Issuri D'Rabbanan, the Chachamim need to reinforce their words. That's approach number two. And then the Gemara ends off by saying, in any way, she's persuading. This davar acher, this anyway, she's persuading. Is that going on Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar's position, or is that going on Rabbi's position? That's the Gemara's next question. Davar acher man ketanila, ikadamer Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar ketanila. So the Gemara says, on one hand, you could see this as being a function of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. O matam kamer, matam amru hu pasul vi psula kansu oso ksuva mimneshu margila. Look, this could be an explanation of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar in that. Why is it that he's disqualified, she's disqualified, and the chachamim didn't have her forfeit ksuva. It's very simple. Because over here, the man is going to have to be doing all the persuading. Because think about it. She's going to get involved in a marriage where she's going to become a halala? No. As much as women want to get married, but they also don't want to become a halala. So, in such a scenario, one can easily envision that he did most of the persuading. Therefore, she doesn't lose her ksuva. However, if no statuses get changed, then the marriage is not going to affect neither him nor her. So then the default assumption is that she's the one who persuaded the marriage, and therefore she forfeits her ksuva. That's one way to understand the davar acher of the braisa. On the other hand, one can also understand that this davar acher at the end of the braisa is really for Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Why? Because Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says that the whole difference between the Reish and the Sefer is Daraisa versus Darabanan. Yeah, but Grusha V'chalutza is not all Daraisa. Okay, David pointed out. So V'chalutza Kakasha Leva Chalutza Darabanan. We know that a Chalutza marrying a Kohen is not Nisa Daraisa, it's only Nisa Darabanan. V'yisle Ksuva. And meanwhile, she has a Ksuva. Why should that be? Hadar Amar, Kevin Tapasala, Midarabanan, Zeo Margila, V'zu Hi Margila Sto. That's why we need that Dover Acher. The Dover Acher has to explain what is Chalutza doing in Category 1, not why is it not in Category 2. It's Nisa Darabanan. It should belong in Category 2. She should forfeit her Ksuva in the case of a Chalutza marrying a Kohen. Answer is because he persuaded, it was not her persuaded, and again, the assumption is that he persuaded because she becomes a Chalala through such a marriage. Okay. My Ika bein Rebbe l'Rishimah min Elazar. Gemara says, okay, good. We now basically know that if a Kohen marries a Grusha or a Chalutza, or a Kohen Gadol marries an Almana, she doesn't forfeit a Ksuva. Okay? And we know that if a man marries a woman who's a shnia to him in a rabbinic prohibition, so she does lose her ksuva. Chachamim sanction a kanath where she will lose her ksuva. Okay, and we have two different explanations. One provided by Rishon Lezion and the other one provided by Rebbe. When all said and done, what's the difference? Meaning both explanations are fine, stand in of themselves.
One was the same explanation, if you think
about it. It's similar to one another, but okay. But what's the practical difference between the two? So the Gemara now is going to look for a nafkamina. This Gemara over here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 different possible nafkaminas. You're going to see the Gemara is going to end up rejecting them. We're looking at, I'll tell you what the Gemara, the goal of the Gemara is. We're going to look for a union that is biblically prohibited, but doesn't change status. Doesn't change neither her status nor her child's status. Okay, so that's what we're looking for. So that would be then a nafkamina between Rebbe Shimon Elazar and Rebbe. According to Rebbe, the whole difference is Daraisa versus Darabanan. Meaning Rebbe says that if it's an Issa Daraisa, she will not forfeit her ksuva. It's an Issa Darabanan, she will forfeit her ksuva. And according to Rebbe Shimon Elazar, everything has to do with a status change. If there's a status change, so then there's a forfeiture. If there's no status change, no. If there's a status change, there is no forfeiture. If there's no status change, then there is a forfeiture. So what we're looking for now is a violation of an Issa Daraisa where there's no status change. That's what we're looking for. Amar of Chista, so here we go, attempt number one. Mamzeris in the Sina Yisrael, Alika Benayu, Mandamar Daraisa, Hanami Daraisa. Mamzeris in the Sina, marrying a Yisrael. So that's an Issa Daraisa. Nesina, give onim. The Gemara here refers to as Nisa Daraisa. I know it always comes back to this issue of what exactly is the prohibition of a man marrying a Gavoni, right, who converted, right? The Gemara earlier said that Moshe, Yehoshua, David HaMelech all placed a ban on them. But it sounded earlier like it's rabbinic, and the Gemara over here makes it sound like it's Daraisa. Okay. I just fast-forwarded it through a lot of Gemara. But anyway, so Mandama Daraisa, Anami Daraisa, just read the Gemara Kipshuto. It's an Issa Daraisa for a man to marry a Mamzeres. And Mandama Misha Margila, Hahi Margalale. But over here, her status doesn't change. And so if her status is not changing, if her status is not changing, so then she probably persuaded, she was the one who initiated the marriage. Now, as Rashi over here points out, let's think this through. Not only do we have to say that there's no status change for her, but we're also going to have to argue that there's no status change for the children as well. Hold on one second. If she's a mamzeris, what is a child? Child is also going to be a mamzer, a mamzeris. So what does that mean? There's no status change. Sure, there's going to be a status change. She's not going to get excited to go into this marriage knowing that her children that she's going to have with this man are going to become mamzerim. So Rashi over here points out, yeah, but mamzerim are somewhat correctable. What? So Rashi says, yeah, remember, we had the opinion earlier, Rabbi Tarfon, we have Rashi over here quotes the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon, that at least for the boys that you're going to have, so it is, Mamzeris is somewhat correctable. Having them marry a Shivcha Kananis, and then the grandchild is going to become an Eved Meshuchrer. Okay. Anyway, so but even according to Rashi, it takes care of the boys. It doesn't take care of the girls. Anyway, so the Gemara says, So the Gemara immediately rejects this approach because look, that's one Tana's opinion. It also happens to be the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer that if mom is a mamzer, the children are going to be a mamzerim, and there's no out from the mamzeris. So once again, we're not going to assume that this woman is going to be initiating this marriage where although she's a mamzeris and her status is not going to change, but all of her children are going to be a mamzerim. Okay. Elam Rav Yosef, so again, we're now attempt number two. Once again, what we're looking for is a marriage where the union is prohibited in a Torah, but there's no status change. So attempt number two of the Gemara Elam Rav Yosef, Machzir Grushasa Mishinises. Man divorces a woman, she marries another man, she divorces from that other man, and the original husband's going to take her back. That's an Isser min HaTorah. Iga Beinah Mandama Daraisa Nami Daraisa Mandama Mimneshu Hu Margila Hahi Margila Lei. So the Gemara says, and this woman goes through no status change whatsoever. Meaning this woman, although she violates an Isser min HaTorah, but doesn't go through a status change, and her children do not go through a status change as well. So here's a scenario where there's an Isser d'oraisa, but there's no status change. This would be a nafka mina between Rebbe and Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar. The Gemara says, Rabbi Kiva, Dama Yish Mamzer Mechai V'Lavin Halo Margila Lei V'Lo Midi. Gemara says again, but we want an answer that will satisfy everybody. This answer will not satisfy everyone because according to Rabbi Akiva, if a union is a biblical prohibition, it's a lav min haTorah, the child is going to be a mamzer. So the resulting child is going to be a mamzer. She's not going to want to get into this marriage. So this is now attempt number three. Elamar of Papa Beulah LeKohen Gadol Yikabeinayu. So let's say you have a woman who is not a Besula, she's not a virgin, she's a Beula, and she marries a Kohen Gadol. We know that there's a mitzvah essay, a positive commandment for a Kohen Gadol to marry a Besula. And here, her pagam is that she is not a Besula. But that's it. In other words, that's the only thing prohibiting her from the Kohen Gadol. So it's an Isser essay. So mandama daraisa anami daraisa. Okay, still, it's an Isser min haTorah. Mandama mishu margila ha hi margila le. She was the one who initiated this marriage. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, damar yesh chala mechai ve'aseh halo margila le v'lo midi. Again, the Gemara quotes for the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, which we saw earlier in the Masechta, that says that she is not going to initiate this marriage because the child, she and the children will be halalim. So now the Gemara says, even through an Isser Aseh, so now the Gemara says, Alam Ravashi, Machzer Safik Sota So Iga Beinayhu. A man takes back his wife who is a Safik Sota. Safik Sota just simply means she's secluded with a man, but we do not know. There was no evidence, no witnesses that said that she actually committed adultery. She is a Safik Sota. She has to go to the Beis HaMikdash and drink the Meis Sota. So man dar midaraisa, na midaraisa. Now it's a biblical prohibition for a man to marry his Safik Sota. Omanda mimeshu margila hahi margila lei. On the other hand, though, she's not going to go through any status change. So the Gemara says, "Rav Masi ben Charash Damar Afila Halach Balalash Koso Balah Bederech Hasazona Halam Argilei V'lo Midi." The Gemara says, "Yeah, but there is an opinion that we also saw earlier that says that through the act of relations between this man and this woman, she will become a zona." So the Gemara says she does go through a status change. So this too is not going to be an afgamina. So finally, this is now the fifth attempt of the Gemara attempting to try to find a scenario in which it's an Isser D'oraisa, and she does not go through a status change. Ela Amar Mar Baravashi Sota Vaday Ika Beinayu. Well, she's a Vaday Sota, meaning that she was a married woman. She was Mizanis. She committed adultery. She is prohibited in the Torah, right? Rashi quotes the pasuk Vehilon Nispasad Demash Mahov Alone Nansa Suravi. So the Gemara says, And this woman being married to this man is going to be an Issa Daraisa, and meanwhile the child that they produce is not going to be a mamzer, right? Rashi quotes the Gemara that we saw earlier back on Daf Mem Tes Amud Beis, that there are a couple of notable exceptions where even though the union between him and her, an Issa Min HaTorah, nevertheless the resulting child is not going to be a mamzer. One example Gemara gave earlier was Nida, right? A man is Bola Nida. The child, the resulting child, is not going to be a mamzer. And two, and the second exception is going to be a sota. A man has relations with his wife who was misateh. She did commit adultery. Nevertheless, the resulting child is not going to be a mamzer. Okay, finally, we have a nafkamina between Rebbe and Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar. According to Rebbe, it's an issa daraisa, and therefore she does not forfeit her ksuva. She will retain her ksuva. According to Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar, no, she forfeits her ksuva. Why? Because even though it's an issa daraisa, but she goes through no status change, and because she goes through no status change, therefore the default assumption is that she was the one who initiated and prompted this marriage to occur. The suffix sota, right? The suffix sota still has to go through the whole process. Why she hasn't gone through the process yet?
He was talking about
Vada. In a case of vadai, she's not going to drink the mesota. The mesota is only drunk in a scenario where we don't know what happens. The Gemara's last answer over here is we know exactly what happened. She committed adultery. Why isn't this a capital crime? It is a capital crime. But in order for Beis Din to execute, Beis Din needs everything to be in perfect working order. There's a tremendous process to put somebody to death, and so it's very possible that she wasn't actually executed.
Even that, the children
would
get
Yerusha. Yeah, agreed. Right. Okay. We start with the next Mishnah. Again, let's remind ourselves. Tosfos says at the beginning of this perek, there's going to be a lot of review. So, this Mishnah and today's Daf Pei Vav, a lot of review of what we already know. Bas Yisrael Mures L'Kohen. If you have a woman who is betrothed to a Kohen, but not married, meaning not the second stage of marriage. Mu'uberes mi Kohen. She's impregnated by a Kohen. Shomeres Yavam L'Kohen. Or she was married to a Kohen, her husband died, and she's waiting now for her Yavam to do something. She's now in that Shomer's Yavam waiting period. V'chein, Bas Kohen, Li Yisrael, and similarly a Bas Kohen to Yisrael, Lo Socha B'Truma. In all these cases, she cannot eat Truma, because she can only eat Truma while she's married to a Kohen. But in all these cases, not. Why not pregnancy? Why doesn't pregnancy allow her to marry? So again, this goes back to a point that we made earlier in the Masechta. She does not, a pregnant fetus, sorry, that made no sense. A fetus inside of her, even if that fetus is a Kohen, is not going to entitle her to eat Truma. The child born is going to be entitled her to eat Truma, but not the fetus inside. Remember, either it was a drush or because one of the suggestions we made earlier is that the fetus inside of her is not yet a Kohen. One of those two. Bas Yisrael Mures is a Levi. Now, we're going to do the same thing again, but now we're going to describe everything, but now with a Levi instead of a Kohen. Bas Yisrael Mures is a Levi. Mubaris Milevi. Shemres Yavam Lilevi. Vechem Bas Levi Li Yisrael. Lo Sochal B'Meiser. She's not allowed to eat Meiser. Meiser over here referring to Meiser Rishon. We know that of the Hafrasha of the tithing that's done, first 2% is given to the Kohen, that's Truma Gedola. The next 10% is given to the Levi, that's Meister Rishon. She, the wife of a Levi, cannot eat Meister Rishon until she becomes the wife of a Levi. But in all these cases where it's just Kedushin, it's not Nisuin, or she's pregnant with a Levi inside of her, or she's a Bas Levi who is right now married to Yisrael, in all those cases, she can't eat Meiser. The obvious question, which the Gemara is going to deal with, is: I understand that Truma, that a non Kohen can't eat Truma. That's a Zar Shachal Truma. A non Kohen eating Truma is Chayv Misa B'Dei Shamayim. It's a serious offense. But when we're talking about non Levim meaning Meiser, what's the big deal? Everyone can eat Meiser. Meiser is no Kedusha. So what is the Mishnah over here telling us that, oh, if she's not married to a Levi, she can't eat Meiser? Sure she could. Okay, it's a basic question. The Gemara is going to deal with it. We're going to see it inside the Gemara. Basle v'meres l'sa kohen, mu beres mikohen, shemeres yavam l'kohen, v'chein bas kohen l'levi lo socha lo b'chuma v'lo b'maiser. If I have a baslevi who is betrothed to a kohen, pregnated by a kohen, waiting for a kohen to do yibum, and a bas kohen married to a levi, so not unable to eat shuma and not maiser. Okay, preclude from both. We go right to the Gemara, and right away the Gemara asks the obvious question. I don't understand. I understand the first part of the Mishnah when we're talking about a woman who is not fully married to a Kohen. She is precluded from Truma. I get it. Only Kohanim can eat Truma. But what is the second half of the Mishnah talking about? Until she's married to a Levi, she can't eat Meister. Sure she could eat Meister. What's the Mishnah talking about?
It has to be given to her, though.
Oh, you're okay. So good. So you're focusing on distribution. Good. Hold your thought for just a moment. So kimilo achla b'maiser. I'm Rav Nachman. I'm Shmuel. I'm Ani Rabbi Meir. I'm a Meiser Rishon. Asur lezarim. There is the opinion of Rav Meir. We quoted him earlier in the Masechta. We're quoting him right now as well. And Rav Meir is of the opinion, it's a singular opinion, but Rav Meir is of the opinion that Maaser Rishon is prohibited to non-Kohanim. Just like Truma is prohibited, to non-Levim. Just like Truma is prohibited to non-Kohanim, Maaser Rishon is prohibited to non-Levim as well. Titanya, and how do we know this to be so? The Gemara quotes a Brisa. The Brisa says that the Truma is allocated to the Kohen, and the Maaser Rishon is allocated to the Levi. That is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Matiro LeKohen. He permits it to the Kohen. Now, two things. Let's deal with the Gemara's main point. It says that a Truma is given to the Kohen, and Maaser Rishon is given to the Levi. That doesn't tell us that Maaser Rishon is prohibited to be eaten by non-Levim. It just tells us who is it allocated to. Take a look at the top Rashi. Rashi's bothered. Nisinas lekohen Maaser Rishon lelevi ketana Maaser lelevi dumya de truma lekohen. Ma truma achilasa kishenitna lekohen velo lezar. Av Maaser Levi achilasa lelevi velo lezar. So Rashi says it has to do with the parallelism. If you look at the parallel of the sheet of Rabbi Meir, he's not just talking about distribution and allocation. What Rabbi Meir means is, just like Truma is given to the Kohen and can only exclusively be eaten by a Kohen, so too Maaser Rishon can only be given to a Levi and exclusively eaten by the Levium. That's how Rashi understands it. Take a look at the top Tosis. I'm not going to go through it right now. Please take a look at the top Tosis, where he also addresses this very same question of how do we see that according to Rabbi Meir that there's a prohibition for non-Levium to eat Maaser Rishon. Either way. This is not the accepted halal. Rabbi Meir is a Shitas Yachid. But it's just a way of it helps us understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir, which makes sense. So generally speaking, Stam Mishnah is to Rabbi Meir.
So if he has a guest and can
share Yes, correct. Right, he could share his Maaser Rishon with others, with other non-Levim. And then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is Matira LeKohen. He allows a Kohen to receive the Maaser Rishon. Matira Mechlal De'ikamanda Aser. I'm sorry, Matira means that the Kohen can eat, and it sounds like he can't. Ela'ema nosno af LeKohen. So no, it just means that you can distribute it either to the Levi or to the Kohen as well. My time at the Rav Meir, Amar Rav Achabre, the Rav Mishmed, the Gemara. So the Gemara says, we have a tradition. Gemara over here, when the Gemara says the word Gemara, it means it's a tradition. Rashi over here says, Rebbe Kach Kibo Mei Rabo, V'Rabo Mei Rabo, Ad Rebbe Meir. Okay, it's a tradition going all the way back to Rav Meir, meaning this is what we know. We know when we say no, meaning we know this is what Rav Meir holds. The pasuk says, Parshas Korach, in describing the allocation distribution, it says the Ma'asar of Bnei Yisrael that you give La Hashem Truma. So you see that the Torah is just talking about two things side by side, Ma'aser and Truma. Ma'truma asur lazarim af ma'aser rishon asur lazarim. Just like Truma cannot be eaten by non-Kohanim, Ma'aser cannot be eaten by Non-Levim. Ima truma chayvan la-misa v'chomesh, af maiser chayvan la-misa v'chomesh. Gemara says, hekesh, really? So does that mean to tell me that if a non-Levi were to eat maiser rishon, he's subject to the penalty of misa b'dei shamayim? And the Gemara's assumption is, nobody holds that. Nobody holds that eating maiser rishon is going to result in misa b'dei shamayim. Amakro, meisa bo ki yechaleluhu, v'yosef chamish yisro olav. So bo v'lo b'maiser. So the Gemara says, okay, exclusion. We have an exclusionary word of the word bo, meaning that the punishment of misa b'dei shamayim is only for a non-Kohen eating truma, but not for a non-Levi eating maaser. I should have read the whole sentence. V'lo b'maaser, Allah v'lo al maaser. V'rabbanan, and the Chachamim will obviously disagree with Rab Meir. My truma tovel, so maaser rishon na mitovel. The hekish is a correct hekish, but the conclusion is totally wrong. It's not saying that a non-Levi can't eat Maaser Rishon. Of course a non-Levi can eat Maaser Rishon. All the Torah is saying is that you see the Tevel term that we use time and again. Tevel refers to produce where you did not take off Trumas and Maaseros. We know that if anybody were to eat Tevel, subject to Misa B'dei Shamayim. Okay. When does the produce lose its Tevel status? Only after you take off everything. Truma, Maaser Rishon, depending on the year. Maaser Sheni, Maaser Ani. The produce is not corrected. It's not mitukan until you take off everything. That's what we learn from the Hekesh. Uche detanya, Rabbi Yosef, Omer Yochel, Yechav al Tevel, Shelo Hur Mimena Kolik, Hur Mimena Trumas Gedol, Velo Hur Mimena Maaser Rishon, Maaser Rishon Velo Maaser Sheni, Ve'afilo Maaser Ani, Minayin Tamalam, Lo Sucha Lachol B'Sharecha. It says that you can't eat in your gates. Ula'al Nomer, Ve'achlu B'Sharecha V'Saveu. And later it says in Parshas Kisavo, and you're going to eat and you're going to be satiated. Ma'asharecha Amor La'al Maaser Ani, Afsharecha Amor Kan Maaser Ani, Ve'amar Rachmana Lo Suchal. Even when you get all the way to the end of the tithing and you're up to Maaser Ani, which is the last of the tithing, it still has a status of Tevel and you can't eat it until you take off everything. Okay, that's what we learn out from the Hekesh, meaning that when it comes to the actual Maaser Rishon itself, once it's distributed, anybody can eat it. But the point that the Hekesh is making is that you can eat the rest of the produce until all distributions, until all tithing is removed. Why can't anyone eat Tevel? Or let me sharpen the question just a little bit better. If you eat Tevel, if any one of us were to eat Tevel in this room, so we're subject to Misa B'dei Shamayim. Okay, why? Take a look at Rashi, fascinating Rashi over here. So Rashi writes, Matruma Toveles, Shekoz Man Shelo Hufresha, Chayvim Misa Alechlaso Shel Tevel, Da Misa Ksiv Bei. So Rashi says that it is subject to Misa. I'm looking for the Rashi. No, I think after she calls Manchel Ufer, she calls Misa Achilaso, Tamisa Ksivbe. Okay, I'm sorry, the Rashi doesn't say it as clear as I want him to say it. Take a look, go to Tosos. Go to the third Tosos, 1, 2, 3, Tosos Matruma Tovelas, Perish Bekuntras. So here he quotes Rashi. Okay, and I'm looking for the Rashi to say it as clearly as Tosos says it. Okay, either way. So look at Tosos, Perish Bekuntras, Beshlo Hufresho, Chayav Misa Lechilaso, Shotevel, Da Truma Misa Ksivbe. Okay. You see what Tosas does? Tosas, quoting Rashi, Tosas says, do you know why you eat Tevel, you're subject to Misa B'dei Shamayim? So Tosas says, again, quoting Rashi, because there's Truma therein.
Truma Maaser.
Well, hold on one second. I'll get to the Truma's Maaser in just a moment. There's Truma therein. And because there's Truma therein, so just like a non-Kohen were to be subject to Misa B'dei Shamayim for eating Truma, Tevel in its untithed state, also which has latent truma inside of it, so anyone who eats it is subject to Misa B'dei Shamayim. That's Rashi's explanation as quoted by Tosos. The Kashalari. And Tosos says, Maisa Risha Namiksiv Bey, Chumas Maisa. So the Ri says, Ben, this was your point. That I don't understand. Even if you have Maisa Rishon, you know there's a latent Chuma in Maisa Rishon. We know that once the Levi receives his Maisa Rishon, what is he supposed to do? Take 10% of it and give it to the Kohen. So there's a latent Chuma inside of Maisa Rishon. V'od, imitamzu, lolitzer tevel Kohen. Tosus asks a powerful question. You're telling me that the reason why somebody who eats tevel is subject to Misa B'dei Shemaim is because of the latent Chuma, the unrealized Chuma that's inside of it. If that's true, so then not everybody who eats tevel is subject to Misa B'dei Shemaim. You can have a Kohen come over and eat tevel. And if the whole issue is the latent Chuma, so let him eat latent Chuma. Let him eat real Chuma. Who cares? He's a Kohen. He's allowed to. So how could it possibly be that a Kohen eating tevel subject to Misa B'dei Shemaim if the whole problem is because of the latent Chuma? Kevin de Chuma, Shar Yalei. Uperish Rivan, Mishum de Zashina, Bepek and Israfim, Veloi Chalu, Eskache Ben Israel, Asher Yorim, Ba'asidim, Lichuma, Katsum, Medaber, Ve Yalef Chilom, Lichuma. So the Gemara quotes the Rivan, son-in-law of Rashi. So the Rivan says, it's a drasha. Meaning it's not because of the latent Truman side. So what you have over here, basic machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos in terms of why it is that we're not allowed to eat tevel. Rashi says it's because of the latent Truma, and Tosfos says no, it's a separate drasha whatsoever. And Tosfos' question on Rashi, a very strong question. If it's all about the latent Truma, so why can't Kohanim eat tevel? And we know that Kohanim can't eat tevel. Okay. Huh? Yeah, no, I understood, but the assumption is tevel is prohibited to everybody. What you're saying makes sense, but it just happens to be that's not the conclusion is that nobody can eat tevel. Okay, back. No. If he has a field and he has produce, he still also has to be mafresh. In other words, no. This is a universal law. Yeah, or he has to separate. In terms of allocation, can he allocate it to himself? Maybe. But no, there has to be an allocation. If there's not, it's tevel, and it's prohibited. Okay.
But he would be eating maser, the Kohen, this tevel. He says he's eating truma, yeah, but he's also eating maser.
Okay, but...
So that's why he's...
Okay, but he's... Okay, but that's not, that in of itself is not. All right, okay. Right, right. Very good question. Meaning that's a very good question, and so therefore that would entitle him to eat the Maaser Rishon as well. Good.
Didn't Ezra prohibit the BMW?
We're going in that direction. Hang on. Today's daf. Email Hausam now. The Gemara is bothered. Not bothered. So why do we have a hekesh between Truma and Meiser? And so we have basically two answers. Answer number one is Rav Meir. Rav Meir says, just like non-Kohanim can't eat Truma, non-Levim can't eat Meiser. That's Rav Meir's viewpoint. And the Chachamim say, right, the accepted halach is no. It has nothing to do with that. Anyone can eat Maaser Rishon. It just simply means that the produce is not corrected. It's not metukan until... until everything is taken off. Truma, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni. Or if it's the third and sixth year, Maaser Ani. The email, awesome. Now we're back in the Gemara. We're right in the middle of Peivav Amidav. Email, awesome. Avamina la, Avamisa lo, Kamash Malan. So the Gemara says, and if all I had was this pasuk of Lo Sucha Lechob Sharecha, I would say that's a lav. How do I know that it's me? So that's why I need the hekesh of the previous pasuk. Lishna Achrina Maaser Rishon, the Tavam, the Rav Yossi Nafka. Or the Gemara just is going to bring down a similar language to make this very same point. The fact that Maaser Rishon is tavil, meaning it makes the produce uncorrected until you take off Maaser Rishon, so that we learn that from Rabbi Yossi. That was the drasha we just quoted. But if all I had was that drasha, I would just say that's a lav. But how do I know that Misa B'dei Shemaim ti tevel? So that's what we learned previously. But my Kim took Rab Meir Emasefa Bas Levi Moresel Sakoin Bas Koin LaLevi Lo Socha Lo B'Truma V'Lo B'Maaser. So the Gemara says, if you're telling me that our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir, so the Gemara says, how did you understand the last part of the Mishnah? What was the last part of the Mishnah? We had a Bas Levi who was married to a Kohen, or a Bas Kohen married to a Levi. So she can't eat neither truma nor maaser. Why? In other words, she right attack her from either way. Right, you're married to a Kohen, but you're not fully married. Okay, but she's a bas levi. Okay, but you're a bas levi, but you're married to a Kohen. Okay, married to a Kohen. Meaning, she's either a Kohen, she's a le- why can't she eat it? The Meiser. So Meiser Zika. I'm Rav Sheshes. My Eino Chalas Diktani. Eino No Senes Rishus Litrom. So the Gemara says, Ochelas over here, Danny, this is what you were suggesting a little bit earlier. It does, the Mishnah does not actually mean eating. It means her ability to distribute. The Gemara says a married woman can appoint somebody else to be Torah, to separate. The Gemara says, that's absolutely correct. The Pasuk says, you can eat it wherever you want, you and your family. A married woman, Bas Yisrael, can authorize somebody else to be Mafresh Truma, Lachom. Atam Rishos Lachom, Oino Ala Lachol, Amar Truma Chamuro, Chalas Maiser Akal Lachol Shekin, Al Liman Al Nesua Bas Yisrael, Shin Asens Rishos Lachom. She can authorize somebody to be mafish shumas amaisos in order for it to eat. Okay, so maybe that's what the Mishnah means. Mishnah over here means authorizing others to be mafish shuma, even though she's a Bas Yisrael. But as long as she's married to a Levi, as long as she's married to a Kohen, she can authorize others to be mafish so that she can eat. Mar Berei de Ravina Amar Lomashin Chokin La Meiser Bebeis Agranos. Another pshat, possible pshat in our Mishnah, and that is distribution. In other words, not authorization, but just simple distribution. She can't walk into the granary, and she can't say, hey, you know, I'm married to a Kohen. I'm here. I'm ready to collect my chuma. So the Gemara says, "Hanich laman darme mishum yichud, elaman darme mishum grusha." So grusha, bas... Now we're going to go with the gears on the side. Bas Kohen milo achla b'chuma. So the Gemara says, now, why can't a woman go and receive distribution of truma? So the Gemara assumes that we know this, but let's assume we don't know this, and let's learn this now. Why can't a woman go into the granary and collect? Amen. So one issue is yichud, tznius, more than tznius, meaning that right there's an issur d'oraisa of a man secluding himself with a woman that he's prohibited to be with, and for fear that the temptation, the yetzer hara, will get the best of them. Fine. So that's one reason why. That's yichud. Another reason why is because, let's say she makes the claim that she's married to a Kohen, and maybe at one point in life that was true, but then she got a divorced. And how is the farmer supposed to know that her rights of entitlement are no longer there because she got a divorce? So therefore, because a woman's status always can fluctuate, so therefore she can't get a distribution of the truma. Fine. So those are two distinct reasons why a woman cannot receive distribution of the truma herself. The husband has to go and the husband has to receive distribution. So the Gemara says that helps us understand our Mishnah, but not totally. If the issue is an issue of yichud, so then I understand. But if the issue is an issue of grusha, so the Gemara says grusha, and again, I'm going to go with the side of the Gemara. Grusha bas kohen milo achla. So let's say she's a bas kohen. She's allowed to eat truma. In other words, she never goes through a status change. So the Gemara says, "Ulatamech grusha bas levi milo achla b'maiser." So ela gzera mishum grusha bas yisrael. So the Gemara says gzera. Okay, it's a rabbinic decree. Rabbinic decree that you're right. A bas kohen and a bas levi who themselves never go through a status change, but once the chacham made gzera, the gzera goes across the board. Ihachi my irya meresus afilu nesua nami. So the Gemara says, really? So then, why should it be that the only one who is excluded from receiving distribution is only the arusa? Same thing should be true with the nesua. I did the tani reisha meresus, tani nasefa meresus. Gemara says is symmetry. You're right. A woman cannot receive distribution under any circumstance, whether she's an erusin or whether it's an nesuin. All the Gemara is just simply saying is that across the board, a woman cannot a woman cannot collect her distribution, either because it's an issue of yichud or because of fluctuating status of a woman. And even if this particular woman doesn't have a status fluctuation, but still, nevertheless, exerid the rabbanan to account for all women. Okay, so let's pause over here. So today we finished the topic of forfeiture of iksuva. Sometimes a woman's going to forfeit iksuva if involved in an illicit marriage, an illicit union. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Why should that be? Two approaches in the Gemara, amongst the Tanaim, I should say, Rav Shimon ben Elazar and Rebbe. And the Gemara spent a lot of time, an entire Amud of Gemara, trying to find a nafkamina between these two reasons. Then we go to a Mishnah. We started the next Mishnah on the bottom of Peh Amud Beis, taking us all the way to the bottom of Peh Vav Amud Aleph, and that is a woman's ability to receive her miser, if she's married to a Levi, or truma if she's married to a Kohen. What does the Mishnah mean? So the Gemara gave so far three approaches of what the Mishnah means. When talking about a woman married to a Levi, either it's talking about a non-Levi cannot eat miser rishon, like the opinion of Rav Meir. That's one opinion. That's Rav Nachman's opinion. Or Rav Sheshes says that we're talking about a wife's ability to authorize someone to be mafish trumas and miseros. Or we're talking, Marbury de Ravina, Rabbana says we're talking about the actual distribution of Trumas and Maestros, where a woman cannot go in to actually receive the distribution of Trumas and Maestros, either because of Yichud or because of the fluctuating status of a woman.